How good does it get, SK?
Why not us, Troy?
Today, live from the Pinecrest Inn, it's the Smiley Show. So long, everybody.
This is the Smiley Show.
It is officially PGA Championship week, and we are headed to a venue that Smiley and I don't know a ton about. We'd like to learn about it. As I've noted on the show a number of different times, I'm a little bit of a Donald Ross nerd, but this is an opportunity to learn a lot more about Aronimink, and who better to do it with than Gil Hance, who worked alongside his partner Jim Wagner on this venue between 2016 and 2017. And Gil, we've talked about some other courses in previous conversations, just more southern courses, Pinehurst, Seminole, things like that. But this is sort of a different proposition, a northeast, a Philadelphia-based course. And so where I'd like to start on this is similar to where we've had other discussions, but just when you're researching, you mentioned researching each of these architects and Donald Ross, like it's not necessarily as much about the architect himself and the a sort of stereotypical work, but what he did at a specific location. So what did Donald Ross do at Aronimink that's maybe different from other conceptions we have about his work as a whole?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's great to be on with you guys. The thing that he did there was super bold. Like, I've never seen him build bunker complexes the way he did. A lot of, a lot of his bunker complexes are big singular bunkers, maybe two joined together. And here there were like all threes and fours. Like, so instead of having one bunker, he built four bunkers. Instead of having a bunker, he built three bunkers. And I've never seen it. And it's an interesting thing when you talk about research and you talk about what he built and what he drew. What he drew was completely different. Like, it was one bunker. But what he built, when you look at the aerial photographs, there were three. And it raised the question of, okay, did he really do that? Or did somebody, J.B. McGovern, one of his associates, do it? Who McGovern was from Philadelphia, so he was there. He was actively involved in Aronimink. And there's this cool old video of Donald Ross actually on the property, walking around. And it's like, how those kind of stop motion kind of, he's like, it looks like he's kind of funny, but it's him. And you can see the bunker is clear as day. So either he accepted it and embraced it, or he was the one who came up with it. So when we saw that, we looked at all the photos. There's a great architectural or an aerial photographer. His last name is Dolan, and the Dolan collection. The guy worked for a company who flew all over Philadelphia and did aerial photographs in the 20s and the 30s. The guy was a golf nut, right? So he always took an extra can of film, and he shot all the golf courses in the area. And so not only do you have like downtown Philadelphia and all the things that he was hired to go and do, he did all this stuff on his own. And so this Philadelphia area is this treasure trove of great old photographs, aerial photographs, and Aronimink has a ton of them. So we were able to reconstruct, okay, what did he do? How did he put it together? And then we brought this to the membership and said, we'd really like to go down this road. It's unique, it's interesting, and the character is completely different for Ross, but we think it'll help set Aronimink apart, and I think it's a really important part of the architectural piece. Coming into Philadelphia, I mean, Ross was a competitive guy, right? He was a competitive golfer, he was a professional golfer, but he also was competitive when it came to his architecture. I mean, there's the stories, he was very upset he didn't get Augusta National, so he went after Seminole hammer and tongs because he was like, this is my chance to get something great and to do something on the ocean. And, and he went after that. I think there's a part of me that believes that he was coming into Philadelphia. William Flynn was the king of architecture in Philadelphia. He had worked at Marion, Rolling Green, Huntington Valley, on and on manufacturers. And so Flynn had all these big, high flashed white faces, beautiful, elegant bunkering. And I'm not sure that here comes Ross in the late 20s. Aronimink's an established club, but they're moving to a new place. And it's kind of, it's a big club in Philadelphia, and he wants to put an exclamation point on this new property. And I think there's probably some kernel of truth in the fact that he was wanting to really, make a statement with his architecture in the Philadelphia area. And I think that's what Aronimink is.
Well, originally 190 bunkers is what I'm reading. When you came in 2016, there was 74 bunkers. Y'all expanded it to about 174. So when you get onto this property and you walk around and see this landscape, what does it remind you of? And did you try, you know, besides looking at all these old images of all these bunkerings that I think are the meat and potatoes of this golf course, did the landscape remind you of anything that kind of gave you a bit of a vision on how you can kind of see this golf course stick out?
Yeah, I mean, Philadelphia's right. I mean, the landscape is generally gently rolling. The soil's not great. It's generally pretty heavy and a lot of clay. And you know, generally there's these valleys that cut through it. And that's what Aronimink is set up. There's a valley and then there's a couple of things that feed off of it and some really nice long slopes. And I think in its original design, before they planted all the trees in the 30s and 40s, it was a big ballpark, right? And you could look across the landscape. And I think having all of these, you know, landmarks out there in the bunkering was a reflection of the scale of the place. And so I think it really helped to set it apart and make it more identifiable as you look through it. And it set up the visuals for the golf holes. The green complexes are phenomenal. I mean, as pretty close to as good a set of Ross greens as you're going to find anywhere. So he just looked at this big ballpark, big setting, greens set beautifully in the landscape. It's not a piece of land that you would just say, oh yeah, it's one of the best pieces of land that ever a golf course has ever been put on, but it's definitely right up there with one of the best pieces in the Philadelphia region. And I think Philadelphia has been blessed with such great architecture that, you know, having Ross come into there to that landscape and put it in its place, in put Aronimink in that place, was part of, you know, just a recognition of how great everything else was in the area.
In so many restoration projects now, Gil, you find that many clubs are having to cut down a lot of trees for whether it be for good grass growth or maybe it's just to open up the property. I think of many golf courses that have recently gone to this. So it sounds like to me with Aronimink, that is kind of the visual of the place. I'm curious, were trees a part of this golf course and how it was set up, or just distinctly having some trees out there as like points of emphasis around the property?
Yeah, I think the trees were not a big part of the course. They were planted and it's really clear. I was, you know, the Dahlin photographs, you see the original golf course, and then by the 30s and 40s, it was like somebody had a fire sale on white pines, and there were just all of a sudden there were all these little trees everywhere around there. And so I think it was whatever the time where trees got put in there. We look at it through a couple of lenses, right? I mean, you think about, you mentioned agronomy, right? Trees have zero agronomic benefit for turf grass. I mean, they take everything the grass needs and wants, air, light, and water, and they do a much better job of it. You know, think about the root structure of a tree versus the root structure of turf. So we try to provide the best growing conditions for superintendents to be able to thrive in. And every member has high expectations for turf. So you need to err on the side of turf. Architecturally, we always look at it as, all right, Donald Ross, when he built this golf course, the way he visualized everything was what he built and what he left behind. And so we think in the best way to honor him and to honor his architecture is to try to restore that vision as close as possible, knowing that we can't take every tree down on the property, but try to present the golf holes in the scale that he intended, meaning the width of the holes, the bunker locations, the green complexes, how they sit. When you think about a green complex that sits perched up on a ridge, you put a 60-foot tree behind it or around it, and all of a sudden that doesn't feel like it's perched on a ridge. It feels like it's shoved down into the ground by the trees. And so the scale and the presentation of the golf course, not only is playability change with what trees do, but the presentation changes. And we've just believed, and some people don't like this. I mean, they don't like cutting trees down. A lot of members don't, but we really feel it, and we were upfront about this with the membership, is when we leave here, we want you to see the golf course as close to the vision of Donald Ross or A.W. Tillinghaster. And that involves all that research, but it also involves a lot of tree removal frequently.
Yo, we're here, I guess, nominally to talk about Aronimink, but now we're talking Philly golf, and it got me all fired up, and there's so many cool projects to talk about. And so I know you're involved with that project revitalizing Cobbs Creek, and I read yes. somewhere that creek on the right side of 11 Green at Marion runs all the way down to that Cobbs Creek property. And so I'm just curious if, you know, maybe a little bit of a preview of what you're doing there and the ways in which your experience, you know, the restoration of Aronimink, like what parts of inspiration are you taking from other Philadelphia area projects and putting into that? What part feels fresh to you about that project?
Yeah, I mean, Jim and I are super excited. But I mean, Jim's born and raised in Philly. He's like Philly to the core. I mean, just the way he acts and talks and you know, everything about him is Philly. Now, he moved to Palm Beach area about, probably 10, 15 years ago. I grew up on Long Island, but moved to Philly and been there for 33 years. All of our kids have been raised there. So while I can't say I'm native to the area, I think I've earned my stripes. and so it's a home game for us. It's a passion project because we really want to be able to give back to the area that has given so much to us, both through work, but also through education. I mean, learning, Bill Kittleman was the longtime pro at Marion, and the things he taught us about Marion and just has been basically the building blocks for everything that Jim and I believe in. Pine Valley is the model from an aesthetic standpoint that we love, the sand and the scrub and the brush and just the presentation and the scale of it. So we have carried our what we've learned in Philadelphia forward with us. And so when it comes to Cobbs Creek, we have a lot of historic documentation. Hugh Wilson, the designer of Marion, was the lead architect on it, but he also incorporated, he got George Crump, he got Tillinghast. He basically put, Crump got all these guys to come and consult at Pine Valley. Well, Wilson said, well, that turned out pretty good. Let's get all these guys to come.
The all-star team. I love it.
Exactly. And consult at Cobbs Creek. And so we've looked at that. We're trying to faithfully restore as best we can, but we're also borrowing from Marion. Marion, like I said, the impact it's had on Jim and I has been probably bigger than any golf course, and Bill Kittleman's impact on us has been bigger than any mentor we've had. And so if we're going off script at Cobbs, it's going to be Marion focused, and we're going to try to make, you know, some of the things that we believe need to happen to give the course a little bit more character, to make it a little bit more timely and challenging for today's day and age. We're going to incorporate elements of Marion into it, but it's going to be very recognizable as Cobbs Creek. And so, yeah, it's super exciting. I'm hopeful that during PGA Championship week, we can get some people out there. We can drum up some support. It's kind of fun. Not a lot of people have ever, you know, see golf courses under construction. They think they just pop up magically. So you guys need to come over and we'll throw you in the dirt.
Oh, Charlie.
I think it's in the arm. Works. Yeah, I think it might be in the works. And I think also we might try to get Smiley out there and play that 9-hole course. We got to swing some clubs while we're out there.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I mean, Tiger's done work there on the 9-hole, the driving range. He's got his learning center. I mean, it's incredible. There've been so many of these wonderful feel good stories. The park in West Palm Beach that we've been involved with, Maggie Hathaway in LA. It's great that a lot of people are seeing an opportunity to provide really quality places in inner cities for people to learn how to play the game and give them the support financially to make sure that they can continue to do so. And we're delighted to be involved at Cobbs. It's really a passion for Jim and I.
I can't wait to check it out, Gil. And I have one more question here in regards to PGA Championship week. Looking back at the 2018 BMW Championship, this would have been, I guess, a year after y'all's restoration. First off, about that BMW 2018, Keegan Bradley, Justin Rose going to a playoff. Keegan Bradley was victorious. What do you remember about how the golf course played at that BMW Championship? And what do you hope for it to play like this week for the PGA?
I remember playing very wet. I mean, it was wet out there, and those guys shot, you know, what they do, right? I mean, the best players in the world. And like you said, two of the best, you know, of this generation. And that I think is ultimately the testament for a great test of golf. If you get a great champion when they play out there. And I think, you know, having those two guys go to a playoff was exciting. I, you know, we've learned And Kerry Hague is great at setup, is like, all right, we've channeled Donald Ross. We're trusting Donald Ross's instincts. We're trusting his design. And we're basically saying, okay, Kerry, we've trusted him. Here you go. And then Kerry's going to take it where he wants to take it. And so it's an interesting thing for an architect. Our hands are off the wheel, right? I mean, we can talk to him. We can, but Kerry's great at what he does. And so he's going to set it up. And then the other thing is the weather. Right. I mean, if we get a really good, firm, dry week, John Goslin, the golf course superintendent, is amazing. That place is going to sing and it'll be a challenge because I know the rough will be thick. And if they can get those greens where they're bouncy, I mean, Smiley, you know this. To defend golf courses, the best players in the world, there's two things that can do it, and that's thick rough and firm greens.
Yep.
They don't care about speed. I mean, those greens, if they get really speedy, they could get super scary because of the slopes in them, but it's firmness, right? And you guys work so hard your whole lives to basically get to a point where when you get over a shot, there's a predictable outcome, right? I'm going to hit this. Your caddy says, hit it this stock, whatever, you know, whatever you guys say. I don't know that game, but you get to a place where you get that predictable outcome. Well, you get thick rough and you're not sure how the ball's going to come out. You get firm greens and you're not sure if it's going to bounce twice and check or if it's not going to check at all. How do you play it? So when you have unpredictability, and wind is the other thing, if we can get it windy and firm, I think that golf course will be all that they can handle. If it's wet like it was, you know, in 2018, then they're going to shoot really good numbers. And that's not a condemnation of the golf course. It's just that week. Right. I mean, everybody thinks you can kind of wave this magic wand and say, hey, we're going to get the score to be what we want it to be. That doesn't happen. You know, the weather and the conditions are ultimately what does it. And you got the best players in the world. They're going to play good if you give them good scoring conditions.
Gil, you are so great to take the time. I know this excites me greatly to see this Donald Ross Classic in action this week at the PGA Championship. Let's fingers crossed for some good conditions and check on all the many bunkers you reinstalled there and the creative look there. And Smiley looks like he wants to get up for one last
one. I got one more. I can't let him leave without giving us a pick for who he thinks is going to win the PGA Championship. This is a no-brainer. Just to give you a quick update on the leaderboard from 2018, just to give you a refresher. So Keegan and Justin Rose, went into that playoff. Billy Horschel, Xander Schauffele at third, Rory McIlroy at five, and then Tiger Woods was in six. I mean, I'd love for you to pick Tiger.
Do we have this right? I think, and again, wet conditions, but I think Tommy Fleetwood shot the course record that week. Do we have that right?
It very well could have. He said
like Tommy and Tiger might. Yeah,
he finished four back of the lead at 16 under par. So,
I mean, look at all those names. They're great.
Stage is set. Who are you taking?
I'm taking Rosie. I know he loves the golf course. Hey, and you know, he won his other major in Philadelphia, so he's got a little Philly magic going. And I do believe this, and I don't want to jinx him, but he's such a fine gentleman. I think the golf gods maybe owe him a little something. It'd be good to see one of the old, well, he's not old compared to me, but one of the older guys go out there and win one. So I like Rosie.
Justin Rose gets his second major championship.
Wow.
Just to cement himself in the Hall of Fame.
There we go. We'll have the recovery RV parked right outside of Ronimink all week long to get him dialed in.
That's
so,
right.
Gil, so great to take the time, and we're excited to watch all the action this week at Ronimink.
Thanks, guys. All right, have fun here in Philly.
We'll see you next week on the Golf Channel. This has been The Smiley Show.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the